This is another argument we've been having.
Okay.
I wouldn't listen to us for an hour. No. And I like us. I am looking it up now.
Theater Confidential.
I'm glad you're keeping track because I'm not.
My name is Heather Marie Connors and I have only one co-host today, Andrew Snowden.
Hi.
Tanya Levy unfortunately is out of town this week, so she is unable to join us for this episode. I am sure she will be back for episode 4.
She better be back for episode 4.
So let's jump right in. And talk about what the big thing that has happened this week, which is the launch of the Ottawa Shakespeare Company.
Okay, we're going straight to that.
Straight in.
Well, it is the most newsy bit of news.
The newsy bit is that, as many of our listeners will already be aware, Dennis Armstrong wrote a blog post on the Ottawa Sun website about the launch of the Ottawa Shakespeare Company that has, let's say, ruffled a few feathers. So I have his post, and it's quite short. I thought that I would read it.
Can we do that legally?
Why not? It's on a website. I'm quoting from a website.
All right.
So this is what he posted. Now, this is a surprise. The last couple of years have not been kind to Ottawa's Indigenous theater companies. And then in brackets it says, I hope you get the joke about Ottawa's Indigenous theater companies, as if. Many that were struggling have either closed completely, moved to Toronto, or stayed and humiliated themselves by going on welfare from the city. The result is the only good theater in Ottawa was either at the National Arts Centre's French Theater or something by Charles McFarland. The former GM at GCTC, artistic director at Third Wall, and the head of theaters for Centrepoint, Shankman, and the City, is now launching his own company, Ottawa Shakespeare Company, with actor Michael Mancini and Scott Angus Wilson. Expectations are cruelly high. Could this be Ottawa's version of Soul Pepper, Toronto's classic theater company? And that was it. So that was enough to inspire a bunch of people to put comments below this post, reacting to what he's saying about Ottawa not having any good theater. And
yeah, and you can definitely tell who some of the comments, even if they aren't the full name, are from. We should probably provide the URL with the podcast, which I'll make sure we do. Definitely a lot of people, it hit a nerve with some people for sure. Now, it hit a nerve both because it's vastly incorrect in a lot of ways, but possibly also because there's a hint of truth behind some of it that, maybe a few people are not willing to admit. And yeah.
What would you point to as the possible grains of truth?
In that not everything is as much progress as Ottawa Theatre has made over the last couple of years, specifically over the last couple of years, which I believe is the period of time which has been singled out here, which I would call the explosive growth of Ottawa Theatre. Not everything is golden. Not everything even sparkles. Some of it is. Some of it I wouldn't want people from another city to see and take home with them as an example of what you find in Ottawa. But that's natural in a growth stage. Comparing us to Toronto is scathingly unfair, because Toronto's had a lot longer time, a lot more historical money and community-ness. I think we've had a cholera outbreak since Toronto established its first theater. That's the we are a different level of. We have no. I can look that up. Rupert Brooke's Letters to America. We'll go over that sometime. But the probably some people are upset that someone's saying in this case to the extreme, it's all crap, basically. Except for one or two things. And I think, I would take issue with those one or two things. But, yes, some of it is crap. And maybe it's some of the people whose feathers were ruffled.
Well, a lot of people jumped on this right away to point out where he was wrong and to say that he's clearly not connected to what is happening in this city because his opinion is so far behind the times or not in touch with what's actually going on. My fear, my question would be how large a group of people his opinion represents. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because for those of us who do keep up with what's going on in Ottawa theater, we see a lot of growth and exciting things happening, particularly in the last couple of years. And to us, this idea that Ottawa is boring, that our theater sucks is an outdated idea.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are on the outside, how pervasive is that idea still that there's nothing worth seeing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
if there is even any idea at all. Yeah.
Right.
We're looking at that area between people who are immersed in it and people who just could not care less.
And so what's interesting to me is how we've got these things going on right now, these kind of statements about what is needed and people, because we now have Plosive Productions,
mm-hmm.
Which we're going to get to in a minute. Their mandate is deliberately to fill what they see as a gap in Ottawa theater and to program based on what audiences want to see. That
it's
is their
a
whole
populist model.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
The Ottawa Shakespeare Company is also positioning themselves as filling a gap, doing something that theater in Ottawa should have but is currently missing.
Right.
So this is interesting to me that now we have people supposedly looking at the entire picture and saying, this is what's missing and this is where we need to go with this in order to, I assume, continue the growth and grow the audiences. That's the other big
right.
puzzle piece right
yeah,
now.
Establish audiences. That's I mean, I've gone on the record at least once before. With my opinion, which I know is not shared by everyone, about producing Shakespeare, and that is not necessarily to treat it as religious and sacrosanct, but don't play with it too much.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because I think it's too often characterized as difficult to understand or thick or obtuse or above people's heads, and generally that's not the case. Kids get Shakespeare real easy. There are words that have fallen out of favor, but it's not. Maybe I'm just an old stick in the mud.
So this idea.
I don't think there's anything wrong with taking something based on Shakespeare and doing something. West Side Story is the best example of that. West Side Story is and even that was a naive work, but it was still. I mean, it was based on a naive work.
So this idea of making Shakespeare accessible, that
rankles
bothers
me.
You.
It yeah. rankles me. It
because
shakes
you,
me to the core.
Because you think Shakespeare is already accessible.
I think Shakespeare
enough.
Is already accessible.
Yeah.
I think if there is a group that you have to make Shakespeare accessible to, then you are setting out on a very difficult path. Because you are already targeting people who categorically can't like theater.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a new thing.
But it's not a new thing, no.
To say more people will appreciate Shakespeare if it's just done in a...
But this isn't Shakespeare.
So, okay. Ottawa already has a Company of Fools, which is
yes.
a company that does Shakespeare and that has that same messaging, making Shakespeare accessible. They generally do that through comedy and
mm-hmm.
physical theater... and doing sort of abridged versions of plays.
Yes. Which is, and outdoors and that sort of thing, which is, you know, bringing it to people, presenting, as you say, abridged, but it's the essence of the thing. It's still the same.
Yes. So now we have the Ottawa Shakespeare Company saying that they are going to make Shakespeare accessible, and the way that they want to do that is they say, by making it fun. And, okay, so the quote from their press materials is that they want to recreate exactly what Shakespeare's first audiences experienced.
So they're going to let us eat nuts?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Because I picture, a pit that we all stand in where we get to get drunk or something, you know?
Oh, you're putting yourself in that social class. Yeah, oh, I guess.
But, you know, but they actually say, so it's not to present it in classical terms, but to recreate the experience, which is supposed to be a more populist kind of theater. Yes?
Theoretically, yes. Yeah, that is the intention.
So they're saying that the hits in the 1590s were gore-fests filled with bloody revenge tragedy. More Saw or Friday the 13th than noble or uplifting drama. So again, it's that idea of sort of knocking Shakespeare off of a pedestal. And not treating it with so much reverence, but saying, here's what people responded to about these plays, and we're going to bring that out.
Right.
So the show that they are launching with is Hamlet, but it's their version is Hamlet 2011.
Which I find, yeah.
And
hilarious.
And their space... is a space that's not open yet. It's not even finished yet, but it's a new studio space at Centerpoint, which they're calling a gallery theater with an arcade design, which I don't actually know what that means, but it sounds cool.
It's an architectural term, I think, and my architecture's kind of fuzzy.
But they say that the space is inspired by the Globe Theater.
Okay. That's good. If you're going to be inspired by anything, I hope that doesn't mean it's going to catch on fire.
Right.
But
I think that partly means, you know, there's stuff like there's the floor seating, there's balcony seating, there's all sorts of levels and options that way. The pictures that they have on their website of this space, it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting too, they're going to... So Ottawa Shakespeare Company has launched. They've announced that they're doing Hamlet in May. That show will happen, and then they will have an official opening of the space, the theater.
Okay.
Which I kind of like that idea, that they're warming up this space by having a show in
there.
They're
christening it.
Yeah.
Preview of the space.
Yeah. So the space to me is really exciting. I don't really know what they're doing with Hamlet. This Hamlet 2011.
The reason I find that funny, and this is not me being a Shakespeare snob, maybe it is, either way, is that Hamlet is the most, it is timeless, in the sense that your average high school kid reads Hamlet and is like, oh yeah, I get that entirely. It's like, what, your dad was a king and your mother and your uncle? No, but I get what Hamlet's thinking of, how Hamlet feels. I mean, you read that stuff to anyone in high school. These are the same people that you had to draw a diagram of how Midsummer Night's Dream worked. Who loves who, for how long, and when, and what's Puck doing. But, you know, they look at Hamlet and they're like, yeah, no, I get that. Or many people don't really even remember studying it if they did, because it just made sense. So the idea of choosing Hamlet to update, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'm hoping that I will be blown away by this. That I will say, you know what, that was such a departure in the right direction that it's a fabulous exception to the rule. Maybe if you go far enough away from the original, it's better. I just don't want to see Othello the robot or people in Nazi uniforms in Macbeth. You know, that's just not important. Don't, if you're gonna go all the way like this, and I hope to hell it's good.
So just to get back to the whole Dennis Armstrong thing, it is interesting that he's so excited about a company that hasn't produced a show yet, and to even jokingly suggest that this could be Ottawa's Soulpepper, I think
that is an insult to Soulpepper.
It is jumping the gun just a little bit.
Well, it is jumping, yeah. Yeah, because if anyone were ever to look back at that, I mean, it could be Ottawa's next Soulpepper. This hasn't even opened yet.
And I don't think he's done Charles McFarlane any favors.
By listing the...
By couching his announcement of Charles' new company in this negative comment about theater in Ottawa in general.
No. Even by contrast, I am curious.
So now you wrote a most interesting reply to Mr. Armstrong.
Yeah, I should probably put that online because there are a whole bunch of reasons why that comment didn't pass moderation on the Sun Media site. Not because of language, mind you, but.
Do you want to share some of your?
I'd rather just link to it. I will link to it for sure.
Okay.
You can follow.
Okay, that's fine. So it might be good to lead from here to what I was referring to earlier with regards to Plosive Productions.
Yes.
I did recently an interview with David Whiteley. David Whiteley is one of the co-artistic directors of what used to be Ottawa's newest theater company. They've now already lost that title because of the Ottawa Shakespeare Company.
Which is great.
It is great. It is great. So Plosive, as we talked about in our last episode, is David Whiteley, Terry Loretto, and Kel Parsons. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with David to find out more about why they decided to start the company, what they see as the need for a company with this audience-first kind of mandate, and generally what David sees as, you know, what's going on in Ottawa theater. And I wanted to ask him about working at the Gladstone and because he's on the inside there, the Gladstone Theatre, of course, we all know the building is up for sale. So I was curious about, you know, what is the future there? They did their first show, Importance of Being Earnest, in that space. I wondered if they felt they were going to continue to work there or what they thought was going to happen. So he very graciously did an interview with me and it was very wide-ranging, and we covered a number of topics.
He's fun to talk to.
So I think maybe we should have a listen to that now.
Okay, awesome. Okay, cool. Let's do that.
I'm David Whiteley. I'm originally from Guelph, now from Gatineau, working around Ottawa, and I've been doing theater since about as early as I can remember. Plosive came into being last summer. I was spying on Kel Parsons and Terry Loretto. We were working together. Terry directed both of the beer tents from the last two Fringes that Kel and I did. There's capacity. There's every evidence, as other cities have done it, that Ottawa could have a much more actively engaged public, where a much higher percentage of people come out to theater, and that theater has a bigger role in people's lives than it does in Ottawa. And there's certainly a lot of creators here. There's been a tendency to have a bunch of individual directions, which each make sense and each have their own place, but don't necessarily add up to as full a range of activity as I think can draw people out. And some of the audience's biggest priorities can be left in the gaps between one company and the next. To do self-indulgent, I'd like to do this, but I'm not really the one who'd be best suited to do it, but I feel like doing it anyhow, or I want to do this, but nobody actually cares to see it, but I'm going to do it anyhow. Like, that has got to be guarded against. It would be magical if Plosive didn't come up with some programming choices or approaches that occasionally stray from a sense of what audiences want, big block letters. You know, if Kel and Terry and I, or if the composition of Plosive changes in terms of the artists, if we are answerable to a board of directors and that we are simply the staff people executing what they want to see of a company, it actually does. I mean, it's hard to get that structure to really play out in meaningful ways, but the spirit of it makes a lot of sense in terms of the company is about what the community wants, and the artists who are there making the individual shows happen being at the service of that community, that it's really structurally in how the company is conceived about people deciding and representing the audiences at large. Big question mark in town is what's going to come of the Gladstone. Can it be sold for an adequate price? Perhaps not. Can it be operated by them for various reasons of time and money? Perhaps not. Can they be a host to indie companies and be an umbrella under which those indie companies can work and go, those indie companies step up with companies like Plosive? I believe the answer is yes. We're happy with how Ernest has gone at the Gladstone. We think there's a solid model there, but I certainly would like to see Plosive have a home. I'd like that home to be at the Gladstone. I'd like it to be part of a thriving activity there and to coordinate and cooperate with other companies. What I want to see as artistic activity is acting on this belief that I think many people have, that the audience could be there, that the artists are ready to deliver on a much bigger scale than they do. And if only the audience would be brought in, well, let's take direct action about that. If the thing that the Ottawa theater community most needs is to bring people in, and if it's possible to do so, then let's do it. Each of us as people have our own idiosyncrasies, and we each like to pretend that we have things worked out in a certain way and that life makes a certain degree of sense. But all of our choices, usually there's some big amount of why, like in my case in theater, why do I collect this information? Why am I so invested in putting my time into making theater at all, or live like this? And you realize it. There's no reason it has to be this way. It's just, you know, whim and silliness that we choose to live our lives as we do.
Okay, so there's lots of interesting things about what David has to say.
Oh, yeah.
But this approach to producing and the way he talks about the structure of a nonprofit theater company, I had never really thought about it that way. And I know it's still, this is how ideally he would like things to work. And as he said, it's difficult to actually make that all play out in a meaningful way. But this idea that that your board of directors are a group of volunteers from the community. So they represent your community. Yeah. And if you are then serving what they want to see, if you're doing, you know what I mean? If they represent the community and they tell you what they want you to do and you do it, then you're representing and serving your audience and your community in a way that otherwise you wouldn't be. If you go the other way, if you say, this is what we want to do, and then your board rubber stamps it.
Right, exactly. Which, yeah, no, that is a good idea. I mean, really depends who your board of directors is. You could take that to the extreme and have, like, shareholder-driven theater.
Sure, yeah.
If,
Yeah. Now, he was very specific about saying they do want to go the incorporated not-for-profit route and be able to access grants. It's still difficult to come up with a model where you can fully fund a season of theater without some kind of support from government or foundations or, you know, at least sponsorship, which I think Ottawa Shakespeare Company has sponsorship. And they have private donations funding their stuff.
They have more sponsors across the bottom of their press release than badges on a military colonel.
It's true. But so this real kind of democratic approach, like he talked about how they're polling people and they had the survey and the importance of being earnest programs. They really want people to say, this is what I want to see. And then they're going to take that and say, okay, where do our strengths lie here? And that's how they will choose what they produce.
It sure beats the other idea, which is trying to guess, trying to make up what people will want to see, saying, oh, well, people don't really want to see this, without actually asking anyone at all. And then you end up producing something, which it might be great. It might be artistically great, or it might at least be interesting, or even entertaining, but nobody wanted to see it. Or it was at the wrong time. And so nobody, and it doesn't build, it doesn't establish an audience.
It's interesting, too, that he does see some self-indulgence happening in Ottawa theater. And of course, he, being very diplomatic, did not specifically, you know, name any names, but that he does feel there is maybe too, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but the sentiment was that maybe there is too much of that, you know, artists doing what they want to do for the sake of themselves and discounting the audience.
That there is supposed to be an exchange with the society at that very level.
Yeah. But
I think there's place for both.
And that's the other thing, is this idea of, are there gaps in what's happening in theater? Because that's how he also positions this, is that Plosive Productions is filling a gap.
Mm-hmm.
But that he sees this as an audience building exercise is interesting to me too. If you're all about programming what people want to see, and you literally ask them, what shows do you guys love, and we're going to do them, I don't see how that necessarily translates into people seeing other stuff. I also don't see how this is about new audiences. Because if you are new to theater, you're not going to be one of the people saying, here are the shows I would like to see. You're already going to be a theater goer to even have a sense of what it is that you want.
Right. But you do, okay.
So it's a very idealistic view. And I think what surprises me about that is that David has been working in theater for a long time. So it's quite admirable that he's still so idealistic about how it can function.
Well, I think he's right to a certain degree. Let's say for a population X, a certain percentage of them, in an ideal situation where theater is perfect, will be theater goers. A certain other percent, the other percentage won't be. Okay, that's fine. They not everybody can. We don't have enough seats, at least. But the statement that the portion of people who regularly go to the theater right now is a subset of that ideal percentage suggests that there are common characteristics across that. We will call them the potentially theater-going public. So these people who are going to the theater, this is just the idea that they are representative of a greater proportion of people who would be in the theater if you were doing what these people, maybe representing everyone, say should be done. It's just that these people have a higher tolerance for when you don't do that. It's a valid hypothesis, and we will find out if it works.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that a lot of people seem to be subscribing to at this point is that there is a greater potential that we haven't reached our potential of the number of people who could be attending theater. So it's the debate, I think, is in how you reach those people.
Yeah.
For David, that means programming. For Charles McFarland, it clearly means reimagining.
Yeah.
And for Dennis, it means going to Toronto or something. I don't know.
there's nothing wrong with Toronto. Toronto is wonderful, but we are not. We should not attempt to be Toronto. Otherwise, we'll never get along with them.
But the issue of space is also really connected to all of this, because what David said was that the Gladstone became a space that people wanted to be at, that people wanted to return to.
It's a great stage, and it's got a nice lobby. I tell you right now, if I won the purchase price plus enough to live on for a year in the lottery, I would buy the Gladstone, hands down.
And I think what he's proposing is an interesting model, and I hope that something that will actually work. He's saying the Gladstone Productions, they can't sustain that.
No.
But if they're able to come to an arrangement with enough kind of independent producers to put together, to still be able to package a kind of season and sell that, then the Gladstone could continue to be a theater.
It worked for the Mayfair.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's that kind of thing. And what the Mayfair, the people who run the Mayfair, they have very deliberately tried to engage with their community and exactly. Program stuff that people want to come out for. So again, that's what David wants to do. And I know that Plosive is David and Kel and Terry, so I don't want, you know, but I
No,
only...
but he definitely certainly or appears to speak for
I did
a slide there.
The interview was only with David, so yeah. I can only talk about, you know, his specific viewpoint. One of the things that I wasn't able to include in the segment of the interview is that the beginnings of Plosive Productions, it started with, according to David, Kel and Terry wanting to create more opportunities for women, really, like complaining about the lack of roles for women and just like, well, you know, we should just make a company and produce the shows that have meaty roles for women. So it started with a kind of female thing, but then David became involved and that, you know, their mandate has evolved from that. But I know that
although if you look at Ernest, they certainly succeeded to a great degree.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone will disagree with me on that, but no, there's...
So, speaking of the Mayfair, I have to...
Have to be there in real soon for the Crush Improv.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't really have time to talk about Wolf.
I'm still trying to figure it, some of it out in my head. What are we looking forward to? Besides Romeo and Juliet.
St. Carmen of the Maid.
Oh, yeah.
Well, which is still a ways off, I think. But when you say, what am I looking forward to, that'll be coming up at the NEC. Of course, Pierre Bros' new show, Shadowcutter. Totally excited about Shadowcutter because it's Pierre Bro and Annie Massingham.
Andy Massingham's doing everything.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of his. I've always been a huge fan of Pierre Bro. To have the two of them in a show that's about magic? Come on. That is exciting.
Yeah.
So that's happening soon at the GCTC. Antigone with Third Wall. Are you actually writing an article about that?
I better.
Yeah, that's all that comes to mind.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But it's the end of February. And historically, February is the worst possible month of the year for everything. Categorically.
Yes.
All the way down.
Spring is coming, so that means Fringe is coming, and Magnetic North is coming, and yes, brighter things lie ahead.
Brighter things. Tents.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we want to say I realize we've never said anything about schedule. Like, if you are an Ottawa Theatre Confidential listener, you will know that we do a bi-weekly show. We release our podcast every other Tuesday.
That's right. Yeah, usually before Heather Marie has a chance to listen to it.
Which is bad.
All right, keep her on her toes.
It's bad.
It's awful.
And this one you better let me listen to. Because I don't even know. Have we even said anything? I don't even know.
I'm not even sure. I think we just banged about Dennis Armstrong.
We should check the tapes. Did we say anything at all? I don't know.